Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is Beyond Acceptance and Agreement. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579. It's toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code, usually 001. Then 760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to set the table before we start. And there's a term, probably hear it in business context most often, called buy-in. And buy-in is a very important. To what degree do the people in your organization buy in to the changes and initiatives that you propose, if you're the leader, or that have been proposed by leadership if you're just working for the organization? And the idea is, and it's a valid idea, the higher the level of buy-in, the greater the likelihood of success. And one of the reasons that it's such a good idea in business is because it's also true in life. So pretty much every day, you're going to be faced with some kind of change initiative in your own life. And some of them are initiated by you. So you may have initiated a new diet plan this month, or a new exercise regime, or you may have initiated a shift in your career, or a shift in your job direction. You might have initiated a change in your relationship status, to start one up or take one down. And then there are the changes that are thrust upon you. So you might have sudden health concerns. You might have sudden changes in your financial status. You might have sudden changes in your employment status. And the degree to which you buy in to those changes really makes a tremendous difference in the success or failure of those changes in your life. Again, we're going to go to the phones after this. Numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, and 760-918-4300 from outside the U.S. Here's the first sort of level of buy-in, and that's, it feels like almost no buy-in at all, and it's resistance. And when I, the reason I say it is the first level of buy-in is because in order to resist something, I have to buy into the fact that it actually exists and is relevant to my life. So in other words, I'm not going to push back against something that I don't feel is pushing upon me. So if I'm not already bought in at some level to the reality of a new change in my life, I'm not going to resist it. I'm just going to ignore it. And I've had on the show a few times over the years, a very good friend of mine, mentor Bill Cumming, and he talks about the battle of the high chair. So basically, once you're a little kid, or if you've got little kids, there's this battle that takes place over who's in charge of what goes into my mouth. And we get all our resources together, and we basically it's a great big grown-up version of I'm not going to eat this change and you can't make me. And that's not always a bad thing. Resistance is not always futile, and sometimes good ideas, the latest initiative, come on, just get with the program. Sometimes good ideas turn out not to be very good ideas at all. And if nothing else, resistance can be a way of buying time so that you can look for other options, you can allow new possibilities to emerge. But where resistance uses its usefulness is if the change initiative is already underway. So if you've already lost your job, or your partner has already left you, or your mortgage company has already sent you that polite letter suggesting it might be time to cut back on your discretionary spending before they repossess your home. At that point, resistance isn't just futile, it's potentially very damaging. And it's certainly frustrating to you and everyone around you. So the longer you wait to involve yourself in an already ongoing process of change, in other words, the more you fight what's already happening, the less freedom, the less flexibility, and the less influence you're liable to have over how that change unfolds. And so then at the next level of buy-in to a change is acceptance and agreement. And that's what most people think is the goal. I need to learn to be more accepting. I need to, accept those things that I cannot change. And the problem is we mean very different things by acceptance. So maybe you've had a conversation with one of your kids, or maybe you had a conversation with your partner, and you laid down the law and you told them exactly what they needed to do in order to get privileges at home or privileges in your bed. And it might even have kind of worked. Like if they bought in that you had the authority to follow through on your threat, you might have gotten acceptance and agreement. They might have gone, okay, I'll make my bed. Okay, I'll clean the house. Okay, I'll build those shelves. Okay, I'll get a job. In other words, they agree to do what you demanded, you know, generally with the sulky stomp and a few well-chosen swear words muttered under their breath. But you might have noticed that the quality of compliance was less than optimal, and that the second you dropped the threat, they dropped the behavior. So, you know, you agree a curfew and somehow, oh, it was just this one time. Oh, I didn't think it counted tonight because it's a Tuesday. Oh, you have chores that you agree, okay, this is your job around the house, and they get mysteriously forgotten. And you don't want to have an argument every time you bring up these things. So you kind of drop it and they carry on with their lives and you're right back to where you started. And that's the problem with acceptance. That's the problem with agreement. Okay, I'll do it, Mom. Okay, I'll do it, Dad. Okay, I'll do it, honey. More often than not, it's built on the back of regret and resignation. So you regret that you ever allowed yourself to get into this situation, or you were unlucky enough to be born into it. And you kind of have resigned yourself to the fact that things like this are just your lot in life. They're just your cross to bear. But this isn't as good as it gets. There is something beyond acceptance and agreement, and it's what I call the embrace. Change. What you're embracing is the possibility of good things coming from the change. And when you embrace the possibility, you actually make that more likely because you naturally tap in to the energy and creativity that will make that possible. So suddenly, let's say the change, you know, we need to cut back. We need to cut back on spending. Okay, honey, sure. We need to cut back on money. You make the money. You make the rules. But once you embrace it, once you actually buy in and you say, okay, yeah, we're gonna make do on this amount now. Suddenly you don't just find one or two ways you can save a couple of bucks. You find dozens of ways to save hundreds of dollars. You realize if you're you suddenly buy into the I need to take out the trash initiative, that actually taking out the trash is uninterrupted time for you. It's a chance to listen to your iPod. It's a chance to take a break from work. It's time to contemplate life. And you get an insight while you're out there contemplating with the trash into what you really want to do with your life. And before you know it, you've gone from having no prospects to creating an inspired action plan. And it all happens because all that mental energy is not spent in resistance or lost in resigned acceptance. When you embrace change, you find yourself at cause instead of effect. You're surfing the wave instead of being dragged along underneath it. And you rediscover resources like hope, and fear of the unknown becomes the wonder of possibility. And look, you will still falter. You will still stumble. You will still fall. Sorry. But, and it's a big but, the fun of it, the joy of it, the excitement of the ride is more than enough to get you back into the game with an even deeper embrace for all the different things that can happen. So we're going to take your calls. We're going to talk about thriving. We're going to talk about having what you want. We're going to talk about whatever you want. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, or from outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And we are going to begin with Kim in Santa Monica. Kim, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I did lose my job recently, and I am very much, my husband was actually quite happy about it. He was just about to say, go ahead and quit. Because my strengths really do lie in writing and baking, and I am just leaning into, I am a published magazine writer, and I am working on my novel, going to UCLA Extension, etc. But with the baking business, which I've had nice feedback on, I do tend to be shy in nature and really need tips on how I'm going to market such a thing and make time for writing. So I'm just a little up in the air. I've copyrighted the logo. I've got my DBA, etc. And I know how to get a permit, but I really need tips on the marketing end.
Okay, so yeah, I remember once, and I don't know that I've ever shared the story on air because it wasn't about me, but I'm going to tell it in such a way that it's fun. I had a friend who was a coach. I still have him, and he had a woman call, and she wanted to know how to get her online business up and running, mm-hmm. and she. she said, look, I've just tried everything. I don't know what to do. You know, I need to find somebody who knows how I can do this. And my friend, the coach, said, oh, I know how to do that. I said, oh my God, do you really? And he said, yeah, I'll tell you. And he said, why don't you go get a pen? And then, when you're ready, you just get ready to take notes. And she was like very excited. She said, okay, give me a minute. She obviously went and got a pen and got some paper. And she's, you know, this was over the phone, in case that bit of the story was missing. Otherwise, it makes no sense. But, you know, and so she comes back to the phone and she says, okay, I'm ready. And he goes, okay, first thing. And he gives her this incredibly detailed list of things to do. And she is incredibly grateful. And she says, oh, thank you so much. I've tried for so long to find this information out. And he said, okay, now here's a choice point. If you want something more than the steps, the how-to steps, do you want to get something more out of our call than this? And she said, well, yeah, okay, I do. And he said, while you went to get a pen, I typed how to get a website up and running into Google. And when you came back, I read what it said. So I'm going to guess, Kim, that the problem isn't you don't know, you can't figure out how to market, you don't have the information. That what you're struggling with is seeing yourself actually putting it into practice. Would that be fair?
Pretty fair. I mean, I really don't really know too much about marketing, but yes, I'm sorry, I just blanked. What was your question?
Well, no, and I love that it didn't even quite go in, because that's often the way. Is, look, if really the problem was I don't know much about marketing, you could spend an afternoon at Barnes & Noble.
Right.
Or an afternoon on the internet.
Right.
And you would have 100 ways to market anything.
Right, got it.
Information is not hard to find.
Got it, okay.
So what I always encourage people to do in this situation is to slow down, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to right now know how you're going to reach 1,000 people.
Okay.
What a great place to start, or so it occurs to me, would be to look at, okay, so do I know what I really want this to look like? Like what it is I really want to offer? Do I have a way of talking about it to people? Have I talked to enough people about it that I know that when I talk to them about it, they get it? You know, so if you were going to do that for me, if you were going to tell me the essence of what it is that you do, as if I'm an idiot, which is not far from the truth. So just, you know, if you were just going to explain it to me, you know, like the poor little six-year-old. Now what Kim's doing, Michael, is how would you describe to me what you're about to launch?
Just about the baking business or about writing and the baking?
Start with the baking business.
I make all kinds of cupcakes, pretty cupcakes.
Mm-hmm.
Which are perfect for birthday parties and anniversaries and dinner parties.
Oh, fantastic! How do I try one?
Here's my business card here: ninjabakerblog.com, which I am currently writing.
Cool.
And so it will be the Ninja Baker, and you can contact me on my website, or you can call this telephone number.
So do you ship? Can I send off for a free cupcake?
Well, this is where I'm grappling, because I have researched a little bit about the cost and such like that, but I'm thinking that may be the way to go.
Cool. And understand, that wasn't a marketing conversation. That was just a conversation about, ooh, this is cool. How do I find out more?
Mm.
And in the end, that's what marketing is. It's presenting something so that the people who you present it to go, that sounds cool. How do I find out more? Or how do I buy one? Or how do I try it?
Okay.
And you know, it's a learning curve like anything else. You know, I always laugh when people come to me on after the you know, like their first time out on playing golf or something, and they go, oh, I suck at golf. And I'm like, well, of course you do. You know, you've been doing it for 4 hours. You know, and so chances are, Kim, you're going to suck at marketing for a while.
Yeah.
Not a problem. Okay. The problem is thinking that you have to be great at it before you just start talking to people about what you're up to. Because when you start talking to people, and I could hear it just in that little bit, you've got a natural enthusiasm for this. You're quite excited about it. And as you talk to them, each person is going to go, hey, have you thought about doing this? Hey, what about doing this? And some of their ideas aren't going to fit for you. And some of them you're going to go, oh my God, that's a great idea. And you're going to start to do it. And your business is going to grow if you let it. Just by talking to one person at a time. Yep, yep, for trying, just having some conversations this week about people, two people about your business?
Yes, I mean, I feel like I'm already doing that, but I also have to walk the fine balance of, like, not overselling and being desperate, you know, which is a nice thing of, at least I know I have 1 year of unemployment, so I can...
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, Kim, is you're thinking about it, you say that, and I'm glad that that's true, but it sounds to me like you're thinking about it as if you've got to make this work in the next month.
Yeah.
and that just doesn't bring the creativity out in anybody.
Right, right.
So relax, have fun with it. And at the very least, and just talk to people. You don't have to sell them. You don't have to market to them. Talk to them about what you're up to and notice what kind of feedback you get and take it from there.
Okay.
All right. Start simple. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Let's go to Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Yes, hi, Michael. It's great to talk with you. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Yours too. What I've been up to, I called a few months ago about living my life for God, and I've been meditating on what you said and other things that have been coming into my life. Basically, you said that God doesn't want us to suffer, and that's been something that I addressed in my own thinking, and so I've been sort of like putting that behind me and just enjoying and being grateful for things, which has really boosted my enjoyment of life. With the whole God thing, I have a Christian background being brought up, and that as I explored that, it taught me that, you know, God really doesn't want me to suffer, so that backed it up.
So, okay, first off, I need to put a disclaimer out just for anyone who didn't listen to the earlier show. I didn't actually talk to God about this. So,
oh, you didn't?
Okay. No. So, you know, on the off chance that anyone's listening and going, well, when I talked to him, he said he wanted us to suffer. What I'm actually meaning is I am unaware of any... No, this would be unfair. I was about to say any spiritual revelation, because there are absolutely spiritual revelations that talk about suffering. I am unaware of any message I have ever received in life from spirit that would suggest that suffering is anything other than one of the things that happens when we don't understand how the game works. So it's like if I'm walking around in a dark room, I'm going to bump into the walls. It's not because the person who created the room wants me to bump into the walls and get hurt, it's because I haven't figured out where the light switch is yet.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Here's my question for you, Dan, is if you were going to put these thoughts into a particular question, what's the question you'd love to ask right now?
How could I help others with, with using what I feel are the tools to help people be encouraged. I mean, personally, I'm talking about biblical scripture, and as well as just giving of myself, trying to do things to help others.
The first question that comes to mind when I hear that is, well, how could you stop yourself? Like,
exactly.
In other words, if that's your inspiration, look. The reality is, I've got some friends who were telling me about when they went on a Mormon mission, and one of the things they said what was so great about it is after the first week, they totally got over the fact that 9 out of 10 people didn't want to talk to them and thought they were crazy, because
exactly.
It was like that was just this particular guy who was in South America and he was going, look, I was the only one in a suit, let alone, you know, trousers, you know, it was like,
yeah.
And people did that sort of thing where they would walk around me and pretend that they weren't walking around me. And he said, at first it was hard to take, but that's what he was inspired to do. That was the embrace of that calling for him. So I would never, and you know this, I would never give you a specific behavioral thing. You should do this. You shouldn't do that. But if you are on fire with this, Dan, then share it. And what you'll find is there will be people who are receptive and there will be people who aren't. And if you are sensitive to that, you will know when to carry on and when to say thank you very much and move forward. And it's that simple. It's that simple.
Okay, great. And I'll just go with my gut feeling about sort of an online quote-unquote mission that I'll just go into chat rooms. And I met a minister from Pakistan, and I'm going to try to give his website information to my local church.
And it's beautiful, Dan, because really what you're then doing, instead of trying to incorporate my advice or anyone else's advice, is incorporate the universe's advice. Like, if you do that and you just nothing works and nobody wants to talk with you, that's the universe offering you advice saying, not this way.
Yeah.
And the universe will give you much more useful advice than any of us.
That's awesome. That way it's alive in the moment. You know?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Good to talk to you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. And I mean, gosh, it's not my way. Okay. I'm not on a mission. I'm not out there trying to convert the world to understanding, but I love the life that I get to live. I love the fact this happened the other day. This was a beautiful story. We'll get back to the phones in a minute. If you're on hold, please hang on. I'll get you on. But if you want to get on, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. I went to take a shower the other morning, and obviously, I turned it on, and obviously one of the kids had been in there because it, instead of coming out like a shower, it came out like in this sort of massage spray thing. And I had this brilliant mental fantasy where you know, the whole thing couldn't have taken more than 5 seconds. But in my mind, I had this alternate lifetime emerge in my head. And, you know, and I saw this, and I was really stressed out, and I got really upset, and I ran downstairs to shout at the kids, who's been using my shower, and you guys are supposed to not do that, and you should know better. And it was so cool because I realized how far my life is from my being in a place where that would even occur to me to do. How grateful I am to have seen just the little bit I've seen about how the mind works, and to know that there is nothing outside of me that can cause my upset. That my upset is, in fact, just my own thinking. I feel my thinking. I experience my thoughts. That's it. And if I did get upset, that's because I'm thinking an upsetting thought and it seems real to me. I've bought in to that upsetting thought. And just that little bit of understanding creates such a buffer between me and what seems like sometimes the pressures and stresses of life. And you know, I'm just incredibly grateful for that. And that's what I like to share with people when I can. And, you know, Dan had a way of seeing things that make sense to him that he wants to share. And there's a beauty in that. And you've got a sense of meaning and purpose and a call, and you will share that with the world in the way that you want to share that. And I don't have to agree with you, but what I can tell you that's almost like a universal is when you are in a good place in you, when you got your head screwed on right, when you're in a good feeling, when you're in a relatively quiet mind, you really can trust your gut. You really can go with your own instinct. When you're all over the shop, when you're stressed out, when you're feeling pressured, when you're feeling upset, when you're feeling insecure, when you're feeling uncomfortable, you probably want to treat your gut with a grain of salt. So it's not that it's universally, I can trust my instinct, I can't trust my instinct. It's depending on your state of mind in the moment. When you're in a great state of mind, you can totally trust the flow of your own thinking, what I call your innate wisdom. When you're all over the shop, you're no more trustworthy than anybody else on the planet. Your own best advice isn't coming from that wiser part of you. And consequently, it's a good time to just back off, give it a little space, let things settle down. And when you know how to go forward, go forward. We're going to come back with more of your calls. Nicole, you are next in the queue. We're going to bring you on right after the break. And a lot of people calling in. So if you want to get in, number to call, 866-254-1579. If you like the kind of things we talk about on the show, check us out online at supercoach.com. You can follow me on Facebook, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Michael_Neal. Not until next time. We got a whole nother segment to go, so we're going to be right back after this break.
Strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back, and we're going to go straight back to the phones. We are talking about going beyond acceptance and agreement to embrace, and we're talking with Nicole in Georgia. Nicole, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you today.
Lovely.
I have a family, and I have two teenagers.
Me too.
And when you talked about the reluctant change and reluctant acceptance, and you were talking about taking out the trash,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, having to be reminded and, you know, just dragging your feet about it and changing that into an experience of embracing it, I was hoping you were going in the other direction, because I'm the one going, have you taken out the trash? What have you done this? So I think I need to change the way I'm thinking about that, because that's just wearing me out.
Oh, absolutely. And so here's just keeping with the theme, and let's just explore it a little bit together, because, you know, one of the great things, you know, about teenagers is they're the ultimate laboratory for this stuff. You know, it's I had a physics teacher in school who said, and this sounds a little bit cruel, but it was a metaphor. You know, he said, look, if you kick a football, I can measure the you know, velocity and thrust of your leg and the angle of the ball, and, you know, because hey, we know gravity, and we can figure out to within a square inch where that football is going to land. You kick a dog, there's no telling where it's going to land. And, you know, human beings are alive. They are their own creatures. So there's no one behavior that always works. But that's why what we're talking about today is so important. Is, look, the reason that you're constantly having to nag is because at no point have your resident teens actually bought into the idea that they're supposed to take out the trash.
That's true.
And until they do, all you've basically got is bribes and threats.
Yes.
And look, that's what parenting is for a lot of people. It's like that's their plan. You know, what's your plan? Oh, I don't know. I've got a lot of options. I might bribe, then threaten. I might threaten, then bribe. I might threaten for a while, look like I'm going to bribe, then pull the bribe back and make a bigger threat. You know, see how flexible I am. But when you, once you get buy-in, you don't need any of that.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that to get real buy-in might take some time. Because in order to get buy-in, part of what you need to sell is why it matters. Like why, not just why it matters that the trash goes out, but why it matters that they take it. Like one of the reasons that I am just love the dynamic in our house most of the time, and look, we got real people in here, so not all the time, is because there is a general understanding in our household that it works because we've all decided to make it work. That if any one of us decided to just be jerks about it, we could make everyone else's life hell. And we all know that. So there's no, you know, I've got the power. Look, I've got the power until, you know, my daughter starts starving herself or my son starts doing drugs. And then where's my power? Right? It's an illusion.
Yes, it's an illusion.
So rather than try and brandish this fake sword and see how many years I can convince them that it's a real sword, I have found that taking the time to really explore it for myself, explore it with them, like, hey, how do we make a household run? You know, because we all want to have a nice experience of living together. And part of that is, you know, distribution of chores. So I'm not saying how you do it. I'm not saying you have to have a family meeting. To be fair, we rarely have had family meetings, even though I always thought it was a neat idea when I heard about other people who did it. But if you understand that without buy-in, you got nothing,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to get creative about ways of getting to buy-in.
Okay.
So how does that hit you?
No, that hits me well. It's the starting to think about creative ideas about buy-in.
Yeah, well, and honestly, for me, it began with really asking myself, why should they? And it turns out there were answers, but it wasn't because I say so.
Right, because the buy-in is where you embrace.
The buy-in is where you embrace. The minute you get it, at whatever level you get it, you've bought in, you've embraced it. It's not that you'll never mess up, but now it's not this passive resistance. This, oh, well, yeah, oh, I'm sorry, Mom. I know I said I would do it, but it's an actual, oh, yeah, no, this is what I do around the house.
Okay.
All right. Have fun with it. Let me know how it goes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Let's see. Let's go to Scottsdale, Arizona, and talk with Cindy. Cindy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. My question for you today is, I am 48 years old and had a very, very difficult life, if you look at it on paper. But over the last 3 years, funny, once I moved to the desert, I've been able to get myself organized and I'm able to give advice. For some reason, I guess I've always been a bit of an empath, and people are attracted to me and always open up to me. And over the last year, I get emails back. I've been able to, probably through my own experiences, and I've found a belief in myself and realized that once you believe in yourself, you know, anything's possible. But I actually have the steps and the stories that go with it. It seems like the universe puts people next to me at a dinner party. I'm constantly having people open up to me and really, really helping them. And the next thing that happens is people get back to me and say, you should be, you know, going to school for this. You should be, you know, I feel like it's putting a label on what I do. And my question for you, Michael, is it okay if I just continue through my life just helping people as they come along? Because it seems like almost every day someone comes in my path and I'm able to help them without having an office.
I've got to ask you, Cindy, what would you do if I said, no, it's not okay?
Well, you know what it is? I think it's just a confusion of, okay, then which path do you take? It's so funny these days, just trying to help without wanting anything in return and just, I don't know.
So, okay.
I think
okay,
what I would do, if you actually told me that, even though I have a strong belief in myself, I'd get on the internet and I'd, you know, start rehashing again to make sure I come to the same conclusion of being comfortable where I'm at. And as long as people come into my path, I don't know that I need to put a label on myself.
Now, okay. So I'm going to get a little philosophical here. Okay.
Thank you.
One of the fundamental ways that I have found to navigate life, and I have found in sharing it with tens of thousands of people around the world, that it really works for a lot of people, mm-hmm. is that when you see that your happiness is not dependent on getting what you want, that you do not need circumstances to line up in certain specific ways in order to have a wonderful experience of being alive, then most of the navigational tools that we've learned to choose our path through life become meaningless, because they're usually based on what I think will make me happy or what I think will make me least unhappy. So what path should I take in order to make the most money? Because I believe that having more money will make me happy. What is the path I should take to follow God's path for me? Because I think that if I can align what I want with what I think, you know, God, the universe, whatever wants for me, then I'll get to be happy. What should, anytime you've got a question in your own head, and I don't mean just you, Cindy, I mean any of us, we've got a question in our own head about what we should do. It's because for the moment, in that moment that question seems meaningful to us, the world is looking like it's outside in again. The world is looking like a place where if I can just get it right, then I'll get to be happy. And so what happens, and one of the reasons that people are kind of scared of the other world, which is, as far as I can tell, the real world, the one where, you know, your well-being is innate, you're born happy, and you can think your way out of it from time to time, but that's about as bad as it gets, is you need to find a different way of navigating, because what will make me happy is a meaningless question in an inside-out universe. And the way that I have found that seems to unfold beautifully for everyone who really goes for it is, what do I want to do? And just following, again, in those times where I'm not stressed out, I'm not caught up, I'm not, you know, up in my head, I'm not all freaking out, what do I want to do? And following that authentic desire. And if I want to go study and learn more and go to a coaching school, I mean, look, this is, I'm not going to say I think it's bad to train. I run Super Coach Academy, which is, you know, as far as I can tell, one of the most intense training programs for coaching on the planet right now. But I don't want people there who think they should be coaches. I want people there who really want to coach and really want to learn more about it. Because I know that if you follow your desire, the life that unfolds is so much better than the best life that you can create for yourself by trying to follow the rules, by trying to get it right.
Right.
So coming off the philosophy and back to you, what do you want to do?
Oh, I love to heal people since I was a child. I mean, okay. It makes me feel, I've healed myself. I know I put myself first now, but I love helping people every chance I get. And I now have the, you know, the advice, I hate to say it, but I have the look, which I didn't have when I was younger. And it's amazing. Once you are the best that you can possibly be, people respect you and listen to you more. If you're, you know, in shape, eating right, taking care of yourself, all that stuff comes to play for the person listening to you. I feel like I'm right where I should be. And every day I have an opportunity to help different people, and I haven't, and I am making a difference. And I think what I'll do is just, I'm a bit new to this, this belief, not just in myself, but actually seeing over the last year how I'm helping others around me is huge and new. I think I'll stay on this path and continue to enlighten myself and then see where that leads me, because I am happy.
So what beautiful clarity, what beautiful insight, how simple is that?
It's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. The hard part and just talking to you kind of cleared it and cleansed it out of me is people saying, what do you do? Wanting a title,
yeah.
You know? And I don't have a title, you know, that I want to, I don't want to label. I'm busy, doing my thing and I'm not bored at all.
Yeah. And brilliant. Thank you very much, Cindy.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You know, it's funny how much fear that question strikes into the hearts of mortal men and women, you know, so what do you do? And it's, you know, I always think of the magician David Copperfield when he travels around, or when he used to travel around with his show. Of course, he needed a crew of like 60, 70 people, sometimes more, you know, drawn locally so that he didn't have to keep all these people on staff. And of course, they had to sign non-disclosure agreements. And, you know, one of the things that they were taught is, because the question that they get asked all the time is, how does he do it? You know, how does he make the elephant disappear? How does he make the thing fly? How does he do what he does? And the answer that they were taught to give is, whenever somebody asks them, how does he do it? You say, really, really well. And, you know, it's, to a certain extent, it can be as easy as that. If you're somebody for whom that question strikes fear into your heart, it's like, what do you do? Oh, I need to come up with an answer that sounds good, or I need to come up with an answer that intrigue somebody and captures their attention so that they become my client, right? That's the whole elevator speech model, that everyone is a potential client. You know, I remember being asked as part of the coaching academy, actually, at one point last year, somebody said, well, you know, how do you get the person next to you on the plane to become interested in what you do? You know, what do you answer? You know, what kind of things do you say? And I remember thinking, and I'm pretty sure I said, I don't want the person next to me on the plane to become my client. you know, I just want to have a nice flight. And if they're a nice person, I'm quite happy to chat to them. And if they're not, I'm quite happy to put my headphones on and disappear into my own world for a few hours. And when the pressure is off to live up to some sort of an idea of who you should be, of how you should be, of how great you should be, of being all that you can be, what you're left with is, what do you want to be? And remarkably, the freedom that comes with that is phenomenal. And I think what stops people from really going with that, from really embracing that, is this fear of the unknown, is this idea that not knowing what's next is a bad thing. And my own experience is exactly the opposite. That when I embrace, so let's go back to our thesis for today, that you can resist something, you can accept it, but in a kind of a grudging, resigned way, or you can embrace it. See, if I resist the unknown, if I resist the fact, the truth, that there's stuff about life that I don't know, that there's stuff about the future that I just don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know, you know, what the next conversation I'm going to have is. I don't know what's going to, honestly, I don't know how many more breaths I get. I think I've got lots of ahead of me. I certainly hope I do. But I also know the reality is the only breath, the only moment I have any certainty of is this one right now. Now, if I embrace that, I'm liable to really get a lot out of this moment. If I resist it, then I'm liable to miss the moment altogether and get busy trying to set lots of goals and achieve lots of things so I don't have to face the unknown of the future. So I'm going to create my future not out of the joy of creation, not because paintings, I'm going to paint a picture not because painting's really fun, but because I think if I paint a picture of garlic, it'll keep the vampires away. I think that if I create, you know, strong enough goals with enough money in them and enough success in them, that will keep the scary thoughts away. It's not my experience that it actually works that way. When you create from your joy, when you create from your embrace of the unknown, beautiful things happen. When you try to create in order to prevent the unknown, you're going to struggle. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Ginny in Arkansas. Ginny, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm kind of at a crossroads.
Turn left. Sorry.
I have a daughter that is overbearing, a sister that is overbearing, and a lot of emotional issues.
Okay.
And I'm trying to figure out where I'm going and what I need to do to get rid of the struggles that I'm dealing with. I don't know how to phrase this other than to say I'm tired.
Sure. So, Ginny, were you listening to the show earlier when I shared the metaphor of the dark room?
I was probably in the kitchen cleaning.
Okay. So let me build on that, if that would be okay. And I'll go back over it and I'll build on it.
That'll work.
So one of my colleagues, a man named Chip Chipman, the first part of this metaphor, I originally heard from him, and he said that our work as sort of transformative coaches, as people who do this kind of helping, our work is a lot like walking into a room with people, and it's a dark room, and they're doing their best to navigate the darkness, and their first question to us is, hey, can you help me navigate this darkness better? Do you have any strategies for seeing better in the dark? You know, do you, you know, have any strategies for protecting yourself against bumping into the wall? Do you have any good tips for finding the door? Right? And that would make sense. That would be, if you were in a dark room, those would be logical questions to ask somebody who came in.
Yeah.
But the difference is that I know three things that the person in the dark room might not realize in the moment. One is, I know that there is a light. The second is, I know that there's a switch.
Okay.
And the third is, I got a pretty good idea where that switch is. So the most useful thing I can do for that person is, as best I can, switch on the light. Because once I switch on the light, they'll figure out where to go.
Okay.
So when it comes to our own emotional life, our own experience of life, and I'm just going to share with you the best of what I know, and you're going to tell me what you see and what you don't, and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
But when it comes to our emotional life, as far as I can tell, we are designed in such a way that the only emotions we can feel are our own thoughts. In other words, all we can feel is our thinking. So if I think a thought about, you know, somebody and what they're going to do, and it's and this horrible thing that they would do, and that it's really unfair, I'm going to feel anger. I'm going to feel upset. I'm going to feel frustration. Now, their behavior didn't cause that directly, because somebody else could look at their behavior and go, so what? Somebody else might go look at their behavior and go, isn't that great? They're really standing up for themselves and asserting themselves. Somebody else might look at their behavior and laugh. In fact, if I'm in a different state of mind, like there are certain states of mind where, the things that drive me nuts when I'm feeling a bit out of it, I just think are great. You know, most people who've been in, who've had children know that. It's like, there are times where their little habits drive you nuts, and there are other times where they're the sweetest thing. And that the reason for that is because our state of mind goes up and down. Our moods lift, our moods fall. Not dramatically for most of us. It's sort of like a gentle roller coaster, sometimes like a not so gentle roller coaster. And when we're in a higher state of mind, those thoughts don't seem as important to us. Those thoughts about, oh, they shouldn't do that, it's kind of like, oh yeah, there, here we go again. And it becomes okay. Now, if I think that my experience of life is caused by what you do, you have a heck of a lot of power over me. And you have a heck of a lot of responsibility for my life. Now, it's not about pretending that you don't or standing up for yourself. It's just about seeing as best you can that I can't make you or anybody else listening to the show feel anything. All that I can do is do what I do, say what I say, and I know that they'll have thoughts, and that if their thoughts seem really real to them, they're going to feel the emotions that go with those thoughts. And if they're in a sort of a better state of mind, those thoughts will just pass through their head and, they'll think it for a second and then it'll move on. Now, as I say this, what do you hear? Is there any resonance in that for you where you kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, I kind of know that in this situation. I don't see it here, but I do kind of get it here.
When my daughter gets to the overbearing and want me to be their constant, you made me think when you said about the actions, I can't remember the exact words.
Yeah.
Her being responsible.
Sure. Yeah, it seemed...
You brought to mind that with her doing that and demanding to be the focus, that she's not. She's not my focus. She's not. As long as I let her rule my life, then she will. Or let her thoughts rule me.
Yeah, well, or I'm going to take it a step further and say, let your thoughts about her rule you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's what I'd love to do, Jenny, because we're almost out of time. Would you stay on the line and give your details to Joe in studio? And I'm going to send you out a couple of books that will just let us carry this conversation on in a way.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jenny. We are, very sadly, out of time, but we will be back with a brand new show next week. I've got people now. I'm very excited. Super Coach Academy. We have people coming in from Mexico, from Russia, from Sweden, from Britain, from Finland, from Dubai, from Belgium, from Germany, from France, from Spain, and from Oklahoma. So if you're interested in learning to coach the kind of way that I coach people on the show, check us out at supercoachacademy.com. Otherwise, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.